Welcome to Security Architecture Podcast, where we help cybersecurity professionals to stay ahead of the curve and ensure they are successful in their cybersecurity journey.
Hi, I'm Evgeny.
I'm Dimitri.
We have James here from Checkmarks. James, can you please introduce yourself and the company?
Hi, James Bratzis. Checkmarks is an application security testing platform tool set for static analysis, software composition analysis, container scanning, IaaS, fitting really all the application security needs for engineering teams and security application engineers. My role at Checkmarks is that I am a product manager and also a developer advocate, focusing mostly on our developer experience and integrations.
James, please help us to identify the locations where we actually can use Checkmarks product over the CI/CD pipeline.
Yeah. So traditionally, I mean, you hear the marketing phrase a lot, shifting left. So we've always kind of focused on the shifting left as further as possible. Usually during that pipeline step of CI/CD process, when you're trying to run all of your unit tests to make sure you can push on and move on to the next stage. Traditionally, we've always kind of focused on application security engineers and making sure it fits into the DevOps lifecycle, being part of jumping on top of the train, getting off, not really creating our own trains. We've always tried to integrate with the already existing tool sets that DevOps have been using. But we've moved more closely to the developers. And that's really where developers getting access to security type of results as soon as they're coding is usually where it's going to get fixed the fastest. It's usually the best place to fix as well. So really, you've kind of nailed it right there where you have some kind of Git hook, which would invoke a Checkmarks security scan, and we can put the results right into that SCM itself. So that's kind of where we pinpoint as the best place to scan and also to place the results as well.
We know that there are many advanced SCM solutions, GitHub, GitLab, Bitbucket. How well it integrates with this type of systems?
Yeah, I mean, that's really what we have focused on and really pretty much what my whole job is about. We have a native SCM integration with all those four main players in the SCM space. So GitHub, GitLab, Bitbucket, and Azure DevOps. So our native integration allows you to import projects from your SCM. We create an OAuth token. We capture an OAuth token that allows us to read all the repositories inside of an organization. It allows us to write to a PR comment and allows us to create a webhook. By doing a simple import, you can create a webhook for all the projects that you want to scan and actually scan for new ones too. So if that project doesn't even exist yet, you don't have to manually come back later and import that project. You can import it, you can import it once it's created. And once the scan's done during a PR, we can actually decorate that pull request, putting the results of the difference between that branch and maybe the default branch to let developers know if they've introduced something new or they fixed something since the difference between the default branch. So really like putting results and fitting into that SCM, I believe is super crucial. That's where developers are comfortable with. That's where they react with. And that's the tool that they use a lot for their development.
So you mentioned how do you integrate? I'm wondering what kind of access code, what kind of integration you need with the code? Or do you come after? Do you need specific privileges to get there?
You just need privileges to be able to do three different things. And that's basically to read the repositories in the organization, permission to create webhooks. And then the last one would be to write into the pull request itself. So there's three different permissions that we need to do that.
Okay. Is it usually create a problem for the programmers to do it, or is it okay to give you the access? Because sometimes people don't want to share access to their code with third parties.
We offer two different solutions. One is on a cloud, one is on-prem. To be clear, we scan raw source code. So we need access to that source code. We are creating an abstract syntax tree where we can identify any input nodes and any output nodes. And we create a graph, going from all the inputs into the outputs. So we don't need to compile. We were kind of first vendor on the market to go that route. Most of the times is you had to actually compile it or scan some kind of binary code. or put some kind of object code, we always were the first ones to scan the raw source code. So you don't, the code doesn't even actually need to build itself. We can make predictions on, you know, the inputs and outputs and standardization routines just by looking at the raw source code.
In order to analyze the code, do you need the code to be shipped to your data center, to your SaaS service, and need to be analyzed there? Or it can be analyzed actually on the build node or on the node that has access to the SCM?
So it's not on the build node at all. We don't take up any resources on the build node. It does go to either the SaaS solution. So we do offer a SaaS, or it's an on-prem in someone's private cloud. It's still on what you would consider a server.
What type of IDs do you support? Do you have like a plugin? Do you have like some type of command line that I can use?
Yeah, so we support Visual Studio Code, which is probably the, I think, the most popular one coming out right now. JetBrains, Eclipse, and .NET. So the, those are the four ones that we support. It's all based off of our fully functional CLI. So the way we scale out on our integrations and our plugins is by having a central CLI that can go into any of the CI/CD tools or IDE tools as well. So instead of having to upgrade the you know, Visual Studio Code and Jenkins, it all has one central kind of API set or kind of a wrapper, I would say. Developers can initiate, get results from the CLI itself. So we see a lot of developers going that route as well.
Interesting. And what programming languages are supported?
Yeah, so pretty much everything. I can't think of anything that we don't. So it's about 25 different languages. Not only is it important to support these languages, such as Java, .NET, Python, C, C++, Basic, Ruby, Scala, whatever that language is, it's almost as equally important to support the frameworks as well. So for JavaScript, supporting React and Node is equally important just than with supporting languages. Because without their frameworks, it's hard to determine exactly what those inputs are, exactly what those outputs are without having that framework knowledge.
How about precompiled dependencies? Like, can you also provide some visibility into security risks coming with these pieces of application?
We don't scan binaries. We don't reverse engineer any binaries. We just focus on the raw source code itself.
So if my project has dependencies that I'm bringing in form of jar files, would you be able to provide us some visibility into vulnerabilities that might affect these jar files?
Yeah, so we can fingerprint, if it's an open source jar file, we can fingerprint that file and determine what is the actual open source component or package that you're using, let you know the version number, let you know all the known vulnerabilities in those packages, the remediation advice for those packages as well. But if it's more of a custom built jar file, you know, we don't reverse engineer or dissect that at all. So really it's key that, and that's why it's important that, you know, it's be able to scan that raw source code file. So, you know, if you have a POM/XML file or requirements.txt file, we can just pull all that known open source packages from those manifest files itself.
Building on vulnerabilities, there is known frameworks like MITRE, OWASP top 10. How do you guys work with them?
We have a direct mapping for the OWASP top 10. So we have a concept of queries that we run on our static analysis on the source code itself. So the queries itself are, you know, something like SQL injection or, you know, out of bounds arrays or whatever the actual query might be. And we have 1,000 of them, right? The way we work with OWASP top 10 is, you know, we identify the actual queries that map up to OWASP top 10. And we have a subset of those queries that run directly on your source code. So for example, it could be PCI, it could be, you know, specific to iPhone app. It could be specific to any FedRAMP or OWASP top 10 or SANS 25, whatever that compliance might be, we run a little small subset of queries instead of all of our queries on your source code. So you can focus just solely on those findings. Not only that, but let's just say you did run all of the queries. Our bread and butter is, you know, security type of findings, right? We're looking for OWASP top 10. That's really kind of what, you know, our customers are looking for to identify the security risks. And that's something like that might be considered, you know, a code linting or a code style type of finding.
Developers might be using some hard-coded values, you know, forgetting API keys, forgetting passwords, etc. And these secrets eventually finding their way into repositories. And once it's in a repository, it's quite complex and unpleasant to remove them from there. How your tool can help with such problem?
Yeah, I talked about those queries before. So one of the queries that we actually have is Trufflehog, which, you know, it has an entry that actually looks through not only, you know, your current commits, but actually previous commits as well. So go back to make sure that, you know, your whole Git history does not have any secrets inside of it. Not only that, but we can also leverage Git leaks, which looks for specific patterns inside of your code. So like, you know, an AWS token will have, you know, some kind of prefix to it. And then, you know, a 14 digit number to it or whatever it is, a Twilio, or, you know, you can think of all these different kinds of tokens that you can put into your source code. They all have a specific type of pattern. So we look for those patterns, you know, and it's a standardized thing through Git leaks. That's one way, right? The cool thing about our product as well is you have the ability to write your own queries. So if you want to do not only searching for some kind of pattern of secrets, but if you want to do any other kind of pattern searching, you can easily write a query to search for that pattern as well.
You guys provide a lot of functionality. And I'm wondering, does the developers hate you or like you?
You know, I think there's been so much done around training and knowledge sharing that I think it's changed. I think at first developers really thought they were slowing down the process, but now you read about being hacked almost every single day, you know, in the news. So I think the knowledge sharing of that, but also the training has really improved processes inside of companies using security champions now. So developers have someone to go to, has been a huge lift for developers to embrace security. I will say this, you know, coming from a developer background, of course, is that you don't want to be drowned with too much noise, no matter what it is. You don't want to be scraping and looking for, you know, issues when it's a false positive. So really, my advice to anyone that does encounter developers not liking this is, you know, you filter on things that are important. You filter on things that are high. You filter on things that are in the OWASP top 10. That is a really important thing, right? And then, you know, as you go along, you can add more. But really, if you just dump a bunch of security findings on developer, they're going to be overloaded and it's going to be overwhelming. So I really feel like the secret to it is, you know, filtering on findings that you think are would affect your company.
Can you describe a typical cycle? A developer working on the code, the quick commit, they waiting for it to go to production, going grab a coffee, coming back. They get an error back, or what's happening?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the cycle really begins, you know, when you're developing. I really think the best entry point is really in that pull request. When you're doing a pull request into your default or into a protected branch. So something that is going to go into production or some kind of security branch. You initiate a scan, Checkmarks does a scan during the pull request, puts the results back into that pull request. Developer can then make an assessment. Okay, I see this. You know, you can link it into SCM itself, or they can open up into their IDE and they can take a more of an assessment. If they have an issue, they can talk to their security champion. They can talk to an AppSec engineer within their company. They do a fix for it. They check it back in. You can put blocks in place. So if you want to do, like, if you do want to, you know, if your organization's like, okay, I'm going to put a policy in place where I don't have any vulnerabilities over a certain time period, or that it's been there for like 30 days, or I'm not going to allow any high new ones found, or I'm not going to allow a cross-site scripting one. So there are measures you can do to block that. It's all up to the organization and really the trust with the tool itself. If a developer did miss something and they did skip something, we can automate into the bug tracking system as well. So if you do a push into the protected branch, we would push it into a bug tracking system such as Jira. So it will be officially tracked. So it would not be lost. That is kind of full cycle where the scan gets initiated automatically. And then the ticket gets created automatically as well. Not only does Checkmarks create these tickets, but they update them and we close them. So let's just say you have another scan that comes through. It's been fixed. We'll go in and actually close that Jira ticket for you. So you don't have to manually do that.
One of the things that I like in SaaS tools is that they are very educational. They actually, you know, highlighting for you the problems. In many cases, they suggesting remediation technique. And then they also help you to learn for the future, to educate yourself, so you don't make this type of mistake again. However, in some cases, you know, if you are a team lead and you have 10 developers, you need to know who needs a little bit more reinforcement or training. Is there any dashboards or panels in the tool to help me to fulfill such tasks?
Yeah, that's something that we don't have on the platform right now. And it's actually something that I've been thinking about is integrating Git Blame into the platform where, hey, if this developer actually pushes in, we can identify that developer. And the correlation that we really want to get to is that we actually offer a gamified training for application security findings, where it's about a 5 to 8 minute interactive course of how actually a SQL injection is. So it's not like a Wikipedia page or it's not a video. You actually go through and can see the vulnerability on a real platform. So the idea is that, hey, if we do identify a developer that pushed this code in, let's just say it was a SQL injection, then we would correlate that with the code bashing course that we offer and automatically email them or Slack message them, or you know, even put it inside the Jira ticket where they can get notified that, hey, you introduced a SQL injection and now you should go fix it. It's always been kind of debate, you know, do you want to play the blame game or not? But I do think it is very beneficial for team leads to know, you know, how their team is doing and who specifically might be pushing that code in that might be offering or putting in some kind of risk into the application.
The greatest training and awareness that you can provide is actually by identifying a mistake and then showing the person, hey, that was a mistake. Here's the training, read this article, fix it. And that's it. Like, this person will unlikely to do this mistake again.
And really mature organizations, they have their own supplement training as well. So they'll have a wiki page and own their own internal wiki page that shows examples that have been in their actual code and how it was fixed inside their code. I think that is really crucial because developers, you show them any code and they'll be like, okay, whatever. But if it shows up their own code, then that's really when their eyes kind of light up.
James, thank you. Well, we kind of done with the official part of the show. Any questions to us? Maybe you have, and I don't have any more questions to you. I learned a lot, but maybe you have any questions to us.
No, it's been a great conversation. I really appreciate it.
Excellent. Thank you, James.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Please remember to subscribe to our podcast and join us for our next episode.